Newness is a recurring theme in the readings we have this weekend. The word new is not mentioned in the first reading, but when we hear this story in these verses of Paul and Barnabas founding new Christian communities, there are five of them mentioned in these verses alone. We can't help but think of images of newness, vitality, the guidance of the Holy Spirit. But it's worth acknowledging in this first reading that it's in the context of great hardship. In the verses just before the ones we hear today, we find that Paul has been stoned. He's dragged out of the city, and he's left to die. People who take him, they think that he is dead, but he isn't. He returns to life, he gets up, and he returns to the very same city. The word new is mentioned several times in the second reading from Revelation. It comes from the second to last chapter of Revelation, which means it's the second to last chapter in the New Testament canon. So it's kind of fascinating in a way that in these books and chapters that tell the story of Christianity, the last images aren't of death and the end, but they're images of what is new. New heavens, new earth. One seated on a throne who says, "Behold, I make all things new." When we get to the Gospel, John chapter 13, again the word reoccurs in the new commandment from Christ, love one another. It's a moment in his life that's very difficult in John chapter 13. His death is imminent at this point. He's trying to prepare the disciples for what will happen to him. Just before these verses, he predicts the betrayal of Judas. And right after the new commandment, he foreshadows the denial that Peter will make of Christ. So it's in a difficult moment, a moment of abandonment in his life, that he offers us what is best, this new commandment, to love one another. If Christ doesn't give this new commandment to us, we don't quite have a way to understand the meaning of his suffering and his death. What happens on the cross needs to be preceded by this new commandment to be fully intelligible for us. If we think a little bit more on this word newness, new, it's worth acknowledging it's a relevant term in our lives today. It's, in a way, it's a bit of an obsession for us today to get as close as we can to a type of newness. You could make an argument that there are more new things in our world today than there have ever been at any point in human history. You can pick the category: electronics, clothing, sports, all kinds of different categories. But if we peer deeper, you could also say that more things are out of date in our day than in any other day in history. Why would this be the case? It's because things are new for such a short period of time, sometimes just moments, and then something newer comes along and then passes. We're always striving to cling to something that will last, that is new. One of the prejudices of our day, I would offer, is that we often think of God as being very old. The things of God as being a bit antiquated, faith as being something that belongs in the past, while the world itself we think of as being bright and shiny and new. The irony I would offer is that it seems that the opposite is the case. It's the world that ages and is passing, and it's God that is eternally new. When we encounter God, when we taste, we touch, we feel, we experience the things of God, the presence of God, we encounter something that's not just new. There's an eternal, unending, perpetual newness in God that invites us more deeply into the person of God. St. Augustine said that the human dilemma is this: we love things the way we should love people. We love people the way we should love God. And all too often, we don't love God at all. It's worth reflecting on that a bit. The temptation we have to love things as people, to love people as God, and all too often, to not love God at all. As we think of misery and woe that's in our world, Augustine does seem to be right in many ways in diagnosing the dilemma. It's good to know what the dilemma is, but we need to know a way out of the dilemma. And I think we could say that Christ is offering to us in this gospel from John chapter 13 the way out of the human dilemma, the new commandment to love one another. to treat things as things. If we see in things a reflection of the Creator, to love the Creator in them. To love people as people, not as gods, but as men and women, children, made in the image and likeness of God. To love people who are not only friends, family members, but to strive to love all people, no matter how different, no matter how peculiar to the way that we see the world. To love all people as people. To love God as God, not as an idea, not a distant reality, not a hypothetical configuration. To love God as God. It's a way out for us of the human dilemma. It's an invitation to love in a special type of way. If we love another person for what they can give to us, that's a bit more like a distorted type of self-love. I love you for what you can give me, for what I can receive in return. The same is true of God. If we love God because of what God can give us, and God can give us a great deal, God does give us a great deal, then we're not quite loving the person of God. But if we love another person for who they are in and of themselves, as if to say, I love you because you're good, because you're worthy of love, it can be a different and more perfect type of love. And if we say to God, I love you, God, because you are fully good, worthy of all of my love, worthy that I invest myself in you, it's a far superior type of loving than to say, I love you because of what I'm going to get out, God, of my relationship with you. As we think of love, I would offer that it's good to reflect a bit on our day in the church, in the Acts of the Apostles. We've been hearing about the early days of the church. It's no secret that these are difficult days in the life of the church. It's not easy to be a Christian. It's not easy to be a priest. Sometimes I could say I feel a little bit, not exactly, but a little bit like Paul. He's dragged out of the city, he's beaten up, and he's just kind of left there in a heap. But there's something beautiful that happens in Acts chapter 14 when it describes Paul. Picture him. He's laying there by himself. The crowds leave him. It says that the disciples come and they gather around him. This man who's just lying on the ground near death. And then it says he gets up and he goes back into the city. It's a fascinating way to think of the church itself. It's a bit like what it is, what it means to be a member of the church. Sometimes we're like Paul. We're the one who is downtrodden on the ground. We can hardly move. Probably each of us could say that at some point when we've worshiped as a member of the community of faith, we've been the most downtrodden person in the assembly. We've been the most beat up, the least worthy to be there. In a way, I would hope we could all say we've been in that place at one point in time, because it's when you're Paul that you see the beauty and the dignity of that congregation, that group that is lifting you up, helping you to continue. Sometimes we're Paul. Sometimes we're the disciples who are helping the one who is downtrodden, the one who has nothing left, to get up and to continue on the journey, the life of faith. Sometimes Paul, sometimes the disciples, but always we are helping one another to continue on the journey to the new heaven, the new earth, and to the one who makes all things new.